All right, I'm going to go to the audience here for a question. Gail B, please state where you're from and ask your question.
Hi, I'm from Boise, Idaho, and I have a question about two different seeds. One is I bought some sunflower seeds for sprouting. They're specifically organic for sprouting, but they have the shell, they're in the shell. So I guess I presume that you can't sprout them in water. You've got to do the soil sprouting. That's the first
You
question.
know, it depends how patient you are, Gail. You could actually sprout you know, sunflower seeds. I would rinse them several times before I sprout them. Then you could sprout them in a jar, rinse them the same format, and they will not grow straight like a normal microgreen. They will grow curly, and you know, within a week, you will have sunflower sprouts in a jar. You will just have to manually remove the black shell. Although the black shell is cellulose and fiber, and if you were to chew it 50 times, you can masticate it and eat the whole thing, although it does not taste as good as the sprout itself.
Okay, great, and thank you. Also, the caraway seeds was the other one. I bought caraway seeds for sprouting, but I had trouble getting them to sprout. They weren't didn't seem to be. I don't know. I wondered if there was anything special in the technique for caraway seeds that needed to be emphasized other than the routine sprouting system.
I think certain seeds, and where did you buy those from, and when did you buy them?
I bought them from a place called Azure Standard, where I get a lot of organic food from, and I probably got them last year, but I used them. I tried it right away, and then I put them aside because I didn't have success, and I thought I'll tackle it another time, and I never did get back to it again.
Yeah, I would say, if you bought sprouting caraway seeds, those typically take, you know, a week to 2 weeks, and they generally require soil or a sprouting medium. They will not just grow on their own. They need to be staying moist, they need to be dark, and you need to follow a more microgreen protocol to sprout the caraway seeds.
Okay, I see. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Gail. Keep on sprouting.
Thank you.
So now for new sprouters, you mentioned you can just get a you know, a jar and a cheesecloth and a lid. I know there are some sprouters on the market. I know that I believe that you have a sprouter yourself, that Yes. you're sell. Does it matter? Like, is that, I know I've seen designs. They're very fancy, they're beautiful, they're easy to use. Is the product the same? What are your thoughts on that? No, I mean, it was a very deliberate design process when I worked with my team to design the sprouting company jar. So the first thing that we did was we wanted to eliminate any aspects of the jar that would prevent water from draining out. So the normal, you know, jars, you know, have a ball shape and a lid, and they narrow in, you know, in order to accommodate the threads. And we put the threads on the outside and have a straight jar, so there's no water accumulation in the jar. The other thing was, when you make a big jar, one of my few things that give me anxiety still is broken glass. So when you made a big jar, it was slippery. So we made very custom detents so that you could grab the jar and not worry that you have a wet jar over a sink that you could grab. The other item is, I sprouted for years using cheesecloth. Well, it turns out every time you're rinsing in the cheesecloth is actually collecting the biofilm, which actually could be collecting microbial activity. And so the window screen mesh, right, the mesh screen also collects, you know, bacteria and biofilm. And don't get me started on plastic. I don't like my plastic touching my food.
which I made that decision 5 years ago, and now the research is out on the microplastics. So the filter that we used was specifically made out of stainless steel that was dishwasher safe, rust proof, and allowed a good flow of air going in and out and drainage. So the jar and the stand and the filter were all designed to work together as an integrated kit. And we also made it 55 ounces. So it was much larger. So you could get a full crop of sprouts in it. So everything that was put into it was very deliberate. There was no decisions that were made that weren't the result of looking to build a better sprouter.
And if someone's considering having a large portion of their diet coming from sprouts, do you have multiple sprouters going the same time, you know, starting, you know, every day, you start a different one? Like, how do you, from a systematic perspective, how do you keep yourself in fresh food with sprouts, given that, you know, if you have one jar, you know, every 7 days, you've got one batch. What do you recommend?
I typically, you know, will have anywhere from 6 to 12 jars going at any time. So I have different stages of different sprouts, and also depends whether I'm sprouting for myself, you know, or for others. But I did for myself very well with initially 3 jars, and then I went to 6 jars. And with 6 jars, I was able to grow enough that I always had fresh sprouts on hand at different stages.
Okay. And so you touched on a question I was about to ask about when you were talking about the biofilm that accumulates on the cheesecloth and the plastic filters. In terms of food safety, what are the specific steps that you recommend taking to ensure that the sprouts you consume are free from pathogens?
So the number one, you know, I made that point earlier. You know, it really begins with the seed. And if there's any contamination, it's on the outside of the seed. And so at the sprouting company, all the seeds are tested for pathogens. They're tested for a high germination rate. And then if you want to add another level of caution, which I outlined in the white paper we published, you could then soak the seeds in either a white vinegar, glacial acidic acid, or sodium hypochlorous or sodium hypochloride, which, you know, the sodium hypochlorous, they make these very low cost it's like a saltwater pool. You take the water, you add a pinch of salt, it electrolyzes the water, and it's like a saltwater pool, and that can act as a disinfectant. In another case, as scary as this sounds, people are using bleach. So unscented bleach, you know, 1 tablespoon, 1 part bleach, 5 parts water is a rapid oxidizing formula. But basically you take the seeds, you soak them in, you know, the white vinegar, you know, for 5 to 15 minutes, you rinse a few times to get off any trace residues. And by using the white vinegar or the bleach, you can reduce the external level of bacteria potential by 3 million to 1. So you can really inoculate anything that's on there, you know, and all depends on the sliding scale. If you do 15 minutes in the bleach for, you could get 3 million to 1. But what I could say is I've been out there in the world and I've never heard of people getting sick from it, you know, from the sprouts. I think that there was some very, very poor sanitation standards, cross-contamination between animal products and the sprouts. And, you know, no one was there to defend the sprouts. Like, there's breakouts and food recalls every day, you know, in industries on fish, you know, and dairy and meat. And, you know, like I just had a conversation 2 weeks ago with Michael Greger, and he talked about how the government standards for selling chicken now have resulted in the recommendation, do not wash the chicken, because by washing the chicken, you are spreading salmonella. And they've now raised the legal limit that they're now legally allowed to sell chicken with salmonella on it, because they don't have an efficient mechanism to kill the salmonella. It's just so prevalent in the poultry industry. And they say, we know it has salmonella. Do not try to wash it, or you're going to spread it all over and make it worse. That, you know, just try to like get it into the oven and roast it until there's no red parts and you're killing everything. And Dr. Greger says you're probably safer eating out of your toilet than eating out of your sink if you've got chicken in there. And Sprouts are a whole different world where you could really control your environment and keep things clean and keep things healthy.
I know that when you hear about recalls for like spinach, it's usually something with E. coli that comes from contamination from an animal. So that is very common. It's my understanding.
Well, it's not necessarily the animal. It could actually be a human animal pooping in the field and not washing their hands. And so, well, you know, what I like about the Sprouts is you can get the seeds, you can control the seeds, you can sanitize them, you can wash them, and you can make sure you're working in a very clean environment. But the other thing which I will say is when you're buying traditional vegetables, and I love vegetables and I love fruit, the lettuces could be old. They could be a week, 2 weeks, up to 3 weeks old on the lettuces that you're buying. Whereas the Sprouts, you're eating fresh, just fresh. Like you become the farmer. And during World War II, 40% of Americans had their own garden. And today, less than 1% of Americans have their own garden. So I really like, my dream is that everyone's growing their own food, taking control of their own health.
Wow, that's an astonishing statistic. So what are common mistakes that new sprouters, people who are beginning the sprouting journey, make when they begin to sprout their own sprouts?
I mean, the most common mistake that people make is that they don't read the instructions and they don't know the difference between soaking and rinsing. So I've had people that they take the seeds, they put them in the jar, and then a week later, they're expecting the sprouts. So you got to follow the instructions. Another step is people will forget to rinse the sprouts on a particular day, and the sprouts need the water. So that's an important part, that you just need to follow the instructions. If you follow the instructions, you know, 99% of your sprouts will come out beautifully.
So can you discuss the role of sprouts in disease prevention and management?
I mean, basically, there's so much information about the benefits of the whole food plant-based diet. And just think of sprouts as whole food plant-based. So every benefit of consuming a whole food plant-based salt or no salt, oil, sugar diet, you can achieve through eating sprouts. Sprouts are vegetables. They just happen to be fresher and more nutrient dense.
And how about the economics of sprouting? So, you know, one of the knocks, which I don't find to be true in my own personal life, but one of the knocks on, you know, going whole food plant-based is that it's expensive, as if, you know, rice and beans is more expensive than beef. But they'll say that. What are the economics? If someone is going and start adding in sprouts in a major way into a lifestyle, what are the economics that they should experience in doing so?
I mean, it's unbelievable. I think that when you're consuming sprouts, they are very affordable, very available. And, you know, for example, if you were to go to the health food store to buy a serving of sprouts, like a little clamshell, it could be $3 to $5, right? $1.25 to $1.50 an ounce. If you were to grow those on your own, it's like 50 cents. It's really inexpensive to grow your own sprouts. And it's almost like you want to go buy custom furniture, you're going to pay an arm and a leg. You want to get Swiss design, Swiss engineering, affordable. You go to IKEA, but you got to have some skin in the game. You got to load it up. It's shipped flat. You got to read the instructions. But this is very easy because the instructions are ABC.
Great. And how do sprouts contribute to gut health? And is there research that you can cite about the implications of sprouts on gut health?
Yeah, I would say the best, you know, the leading plant-based gastroenterologist is Dr. B, who wrote Fiber Fueled. And what he will say is that sprouts are a prebiotic because of the fiber, that sprouts contain both soluble and insoluble fiber, and they support the microbiome. And what's important is to have a diversity of your sprouts and of your other vegetables, along with naturally raw fermented products, and that's supporting gut health.
Thank you. And now, do you ferment any of your own products, or
I do. I have a fresh batch of a sauerkraut going right now on my countertop.
So you're purchasing the cabbage from the farmer's market and then making your own.
Correct.
Can you speak to that process out of curiosity? Making your own sauerkraut?
It's kind of like, it's really magical, the process of making a kraut. You get the sauerkraut, you know, you cut it right into the shreds that you'd like, typically bigger than what your final output would be. And then you put it in a big bowl. And I've experimented with you not using salt, but making celery juice for my salt. But now I actually just use a salt. I use a high quality Celtic sea salt. And I add, you know, the relative amount, you know, for the portion that I have. And then by washing your hands clean, or if you're really neurotic, you could use gloves. But you take your hands, you wash them clean, you take the salt, and as you rub it, the salt will actually elicit a sweating from the cabbage. And so you really want to get everything in, all the salt dissipated, starts to sweat, then you jam it into a jar. And we actually have a 10-quart clay crock pot, jam it in, you weigh it down, and then you check it over the days, you know, for it to burp and let out the extra, you know, gases that are forming. And it's really simple process. And then you could add whatever other seasonings or sprouts into it. And then you get your sauerkrauts.
Is there liquid involved in that, or just really just cabbage and, no. And
yeah, the brine is actually taking the water molecules from the cytoplasm of the insoluble fiber of the cabbage.
Wow. Okay. And then you add sprouts to the sauerkraut, you said.
Yeah, I do all sorts of different things, different sprouts, different seasoning, different gadgets. You know, it's one. And then I use the brine from my homemade sauerkraut as the base of my dressings.
Wow. Okay. That's, I guess you're using all parts. I guess that's what you have to do when you're trying to live off the food grid out in the desert. That's amazing. So how does if you can speak to this, and you spoke to it a little bit earlier, how does the nutritional life cycle of a sprout from germination to full growth affect its antioxidant levels?
The biggest shift occurs in about 3 days as the metamorphosis goes from that dormant living organism with all these protective factors around it to once it starts to mix with the water, the carbon, and the oxygen, is actually activating the antioxidants within the vegetable.
Okay. And are there any beans that we should not sprout? I've heard that that red kidney beans were not safe to sprout. Is there any truth to that?
The large beans, like the red kidney beans, when you sprout them, you should then cook them as well. But I believe that the lectins madness, and we didn't go down that path, was grossly overstated. But I believe that the large beans, like the lectin, like the kidney beans, I have never used them for sprouting because of that large, hard shell. But if I were to want to eat kidney beans, I would soak them, germinate them, sprout them, and then, you know, steam them or cook them in some other way.
Okay. So that's how you'd go about that. And can you discuss the historical use of sprouts in traditional diets around the world?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got to think about it. Around the world, we have seasons, we have famine, we have flood, we've got enormous shifts in temperature. The sprouts can grow in almost any environment. And so the process of storing and saving seeds really became, you know, nature's cheat code. So I know, like in 2020, when the pandemic was here, I had hundreds of pounds of seeds that I could sprout. And those seeds were anywhere from 6 months to 2 years old, you know, and in 35-pound buckets. And so they were very available. So I think that in various parts of the world, and there's, you know, from Egypt, there's history of sprouting seeds 10,000 years old, 6,000 years old, that germinated 1,200 years later, that they're finding these seeds. So I think that seeds, and if you think about, you know, reproductive systems, you know, whether it be sperm or seeds and the like, nature has provided abundance of fail-safe mechanisms to provide for future instances. So I think that seeds, you know, one, you know, you look at, and I wrote this in my book, you look at an oak tree, that big oak tree was formed from one acorn. And one acorn formed a tree that in its lifetime will produce tens of thousands, if not a million acorns. And then each of those acorns can then reproduce themselves to more. So it's multiplicative, but the reality is, the average tree may not spawn off another tree. But with sprouting seeds, you can go from a single seed to a sprout to a microgreen to a mature vegetable. That mature vegetable will then flower, and then the flower will then fruit, and then that fruit inside will have pods with infinite amount of seeds to begin that process all over again.
So when someone's getting started and figuring out where to get their seeds from that they're planning on sprouting, how can someone ensure the sprout seeds they purchase are of high quality and safe to consume?
Well, look, Michael, for 5 years, I talked about sprouts and sources, and then ultimately I had so many questions and so many concerns that I decided to, you know, form a company to source the seeds where there was transparency and quality standards and lab verification. And then I even went to the level, on top of all else, getting the detox-free project certification, where we sent the seeds out, addition to everything else, to make sure there was they were tested for no glyphosate, no Roundup on the seeds. So this was just, you know, being concerned that nothing is more true than you are what you eat. So I really wanted to know what I was eating. And, you know, one of the things that I learned on the broccoli seeds was we sent out, I was testing, you know, before I had the company. And then where do the broccoli seeds come from? How do they germinate? How do they grow? What was in them? And so people talked about the anti-cancer compound sulforaphane, which stems from glucoraphanin. So I bought a bunch of seeds from many suppliers and I sent them to the lab. And some of them had no glucoraphanin in them. So then I sent them to another lab to sequence the DNA of them. And they said, well, it's in the brassica family, but we can't exactly identify this as broccoli, but it's probably not, which is why it doesn't have any glucoraphanin, AKA sulforaphane in it. So that's where I just realized that there were tools and this was really the wild, wild west of a new category. So I wanted to establish standards and guidelines and use the technology available to do testing and validation and verification.
So what are some misconceptions about sprouts and sprouting that you'd like to address?
I mean, the biggest one is that people think of sprouts as a garnish, you know, and they add it infrequently when in fact sprouts are a food and you can eat them every day and you can eat them in abundance and you could actually be really satiated and nourished. So that's like the biggest one. The most ridiculous one is that, you know, they're not safe. Like that's just absurd. You know, there's some shills from the meat industry or the pharma or something spreading, you know, false information about that to keep you, you know, eating, you know, sterilized, processed, you know, probably what the ones that want you to walk around with a gallon of Purell, you know, pouring it on every person who you meet in the street.
And of the people who are saying it's unsafe, what do they even say about sprouts?
I mean, I don't even know. Like, I really don't even know, you know, what they're, you know, talking about. I think the essence is they're saying, oh, they could be mold. There could be, they could spread E. coli and the like, when the fact is there's, you know, infinitely more cases of foodborne illness from other foods than sprouts, but no one was the voice of sprouts before. So sprouts were pretty much fundamentally ignored in the United States, where in other parts of the world, I went, you know, over Christmas, I went to Japan and I visited a company that's actually, and I will share my screen for a second, because this is really impressive. So one second, I'm going to share my screen. So I visited this company and it was just so, you know, wonderful to see that in this community, people were aware of, look at this. So this is a sprout factory in Japan, where they grow $1 billion worth of broccoli sprouts a year. And they're selling them in 20,000 retail stores, these massive machines selling broccoli sprouts, you know, throughout all of Japan. And so they are easily serving 400,000 to 500,000 servings of broccoli sprouts, because Japan and the benefits of the broccoli sprouts and their anti-cancer compounds. And so they see it as a health food, and they have a fully robotic, state-of-the-art system to grow the sprouts. So, you know, when I saw that, I was extremely encouraged to think like, oh, well, the U.S. is 10 times bigger than Japan, that people will wake up and sprouts can become a major source of food, you know, in the world and in this country.
So with the fear of skyrocketing prices, food instability or insecurity, how would you recommend, you know, in this volatile world, how would you recommend that people prepare sprouts if they wanted to prepare for the apocalypse, if you will, and make sure they have enough? I mean, it seems like sprouts, as opposed to having seeds that you'd have to garden, you know, when the world goes to, you know, goes to bed.
Yeah, Michael.
Yeah.
I have faith that I don't think we're going to get to this, you know, that stage of apocalypse. What we will have is somewhere between there, where we're in a stage where you're going to be buying fruits and vegetables today that are covered in something called APEEL, APEEL, which who knows what's in that item that's basically wrestling against nature to keep things looking fresher or better for longer. And they're not even disclosing whether they're using that or not. So you're buying something and you could be biting into an apple that has some coating on it with who knows what's on it. Even more concerning, is that they are now experimenting and fighting for legislation that says they can inject vaccines into your food without disclosing it. So you may get, you know, a apple or a head of lettuce or something that could be injected with a vaccine without consent, without disclosure, without dosing. And maybe it's a small dose, maybe it's a large dose. So what I'm concerned with is progressively more and more of our rights around food safety and agency will be taken away. And so I look at sprouts as a way where I can control, you know, what I eat and what my family eats, because the you know, people think that, and this isn't a, this is the real truth about health, not the real truth about conspiracies, but people think that these government agencies are designed to protect you when in fact these government agencies are actually protecting the sellers, and they work for the sellers and not for us. So it's really responsible for us. And that's where I have so much respect, you know, for you, Michael, for, you know, doing this, for Stephen Shore, for having this conference and sharing this information and getting the best and brightest so people can take care of themselves and understand the essence of food is medicine and medicine is food. And also, I haven't watched the whole conference, but it seems to be a lot of love around the whole food plant-based diet.
Mm-hmm. So thank you. Thank you. Yes. So you have about 1 minute. Anything you'd like to say to the audience before we go?
I just want to say thank you for being awake. Thank you for being present. Thank you for listening. You know, this is my life's work. And, you know, I've been deeply moved by the reception, you know, the Sprout book. You know, I never wrote anything in my whole life. You know, I never went to college. So the idea of writing a book was really, really hard for me. And the book was well received. And, you know, people are interested. So there's always, you know, some trolls out there. But for the most part, the message of sprouting has been very well received. And it's now snowballing. And it's really exciting.
Great. So, Doug, thank you so much for all the information that you shared with us this evening. If we could unmute the audience so they can share their appreciation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.